The trick tonight, find the door key that fits, and you find the murderer. In fact, the name of tonight's story is The Door Key, and it comes from 1952 and from the many entries in The Black Museum.
This is Orson Welles, speaking from London. Here in the grim stone structure on the Thames, which houses Scotland Yard, is a warehouse full of souvenirs, where everyday objects, a skipping rope, a glass, an iron, a stepladder, all are touched by murder. You take this key.
This was on the floor beside the body, sir.
A door key. The kind that fits only one lock. But whose?
Perhaps the murderer's, sir.
Today, this key can be seen in the Black Museum.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death, the Black Museum.
Here we are in the Black Museum, Scotland Yard's Museum of Murder. Here lies death, arranged neatly on the shelves and tables open to your view. Now here's a spoon. It's a simple household spoon. Our murderer was meticulous. With this he measured out a careful dose of poison. That oar up there on the wall, that was used by the stroke of a famous rowing aid at Henley. Later it was used in anger, swung at a man who stood on the edge of a pier, stunning him. The man drowned in the Thames very quickly. Ah, here we are. Here's the key. An ordinary key. The kind used to open most of the front doors in London. Once this key was in the pocket of a man who was waiting for another in his room at the Kingsley Arms Hotel in Surrey.
Regan? Oh, I'm sorry.
Excuse me, sir. I'll just turn the bed down.
Certainly. I'm waiting for Mr. Regan. You don't happen to know what time he'll be back, do you?
No, sir, but if you wait here, you're sure to catch him.
Thanks, I will. I particularly want to see him.
The conversation lapsed. The visitor sat down again. The maid completed her work and left, stealing a glance at the young man as she closed the door behind her. Night fell. Lights came on in the guest bedrooms. But in one room, the number on the door was 22, a man sat alone in the darkness, waiting. The night passed, and morning came. In the hotel, there were beds to be made, rooms to tidy. No answer from room 22. The maid was pleased her work could be accomplished without interruption. She was thinking of this as she opened the door. Stepped in. The bed was unused, turned down just as she'd left it. Sunlight was flooding through the two windows. And on the floor, a man lay dead. The manager called the police. The police requested the assistance of Scotland Yard. And Inspector Sidney Russell and Detective Sergeant Hobbs were sent down to Surrey.
This is the room, sir. Number 22.
Has anyone been in there since the maid found the body?
No one, Inspector, except myself and the local police sergeant. On his orders, I kept the room locked.
Good, ma'am.
There you are.
Thank you. I'll let you know when we need you, sir.
The two detectives covered the room, and in their quick survey of the murder scene, they found several leads.
His wallet, sir.
Let's have a look at the identity card, Sergeant.
There you are, sir.
Name's Thomas Regan. What else have you got there, Sergeant?
Roll a note, sir.
The killer either missed that or the motive wasn't robbery.
Oh, I don't think it was robbery, sir. His watch is still on his wrist.
Going?
No, sir. It stopped at 7:25.
That might have been the time the murder took place, though on the other hand, the watch might have run down this morning.
He was shot through the head, sir. Surely somebody must have heard that.
You would think so.
Well, here's a shell I found on the carpet.
Point 22. We'll keep this for ballistics. What else, Sergeant?
Oh, some silver taken from his trouser pocket, a handkerchief with the initials T.R. in the corner, and a cigarette lighter.
With the initials T.R. He's well labeled.
And this was on the floor beside the body, sir.
The door key. The kind that fits only one lock. But whose?
Perhaps the murderer, sir?
Unless it belonged to Regan himself.
Oh, it's not the kind they use in hotels.
No. Was he wearing or carrying a keychain?
No, sir.
Then the key would have been carried in his pocket along with his money.
Which hadn't been spilled onto the floor.
You may be right, Sergeant, but to make absolutely sure, that key should be checked against every lock in Regan's home and his office and everywhere he might have occasion to visit. If it does not belong in any of those places, then it seems to me that when we find the door that key fits, we find the murderer.
The detectives went downstairs to talk once more to the hotel manager.
Inspector, this is a terrible business. Listen to those men in the bar.
What about them, sir?
They're newspaper reporters. Oh, this is really dreadful. The notoriety, the reporters, the headlines. It'll ruin my business.
It wasn't very nice for Mr. Regan, either.
No, I suppose not. Poor devil.
What can you tell us about him?
Only that he was a commercial traveler.
He's stayed here before? Oh,
several times.
A traveler, eh? Did he work for any firm in particular, would you happen to know?
Yes, I do know, because they always paid the hotel bills. He worked for a London firm, Hardy and Sons Limited.
Thank you, sir. I'll leave the room upstairs locked until we have it photographed and checked for fingerprints.
Oh, Inspector, there's one other thing I'd better mention. I think it's important.
Yes?
A man called to see Mr. Regan last night.
Did you get a good look at him?
I didn't see him at all, nor did the desk clerk. The maid found him waiting in room 22 when she came in to turn the bed down.
Unusual, isn't it? Knowing Regan's room number? It suggests an acquaintance.
Not necessarily, Inspector.
Why do you say that?
We have a register here in the foyer. It's on that wall over there.
A room register?
Yes, just a card opposite the room number. Some people don't bother with it, but Mr. Regan always put his card up.
So that maid is the only one who saw this man?
Yes, Inspector.
Then I'd like to talk to her, sir.
Oh, I'll go and get her for you.
The hotel manager returned almost immediately with the maid. She was a young girl, very pale, her eyes still fearful from the sight she'd seen on the floor of room 22.
Annie Mitchell, Inspector.
How do you do, Annie?
This is Inspector Russell from Scotland Yard.
How do you do, sir?
Annie, what time did you turn down the bed in room 22 last night?
It was going on for 6, sir.
And I believe Mr. Regan was not in his room.
No, sir, but there was a man there.
Could you describe him to me?
Well, he was tall, fairly young-looking, and dark hair. He spoke educated-like.
I see. What did he say?
Just that he was waiting for Mr. Regan, and he particularly wanted to see him.
Tell me, would you know this man if you saw him again? Well,
yes, I think I would.
The inspector was well satisfied, but Sergeant Hobbs, who had been questioning the guests, had not fared so well.
Now, sir, I'm sorry to trouble you, but I have to ask you a few questions.
Really, this is most annoying. I've been kept here all the morning, and it's extremely inconvenient.
I quite understand, sir. Now, can you tell me whether you heard any unusual noise or disturbance during the night?
The only disturbance of which I'm aware is the disturbance created by the police this morning.
You didn't hear a shot, for instance?
Certainly not.
And you were in your room the whole evening?
Yes. Can I go now?
Yes, that'll be all. Thank you very much.
Well, it's certainly not been a pleasure.
It seems nobody heard a shot last night, sir.
Nobody at all?
Not a single guest, even those occupying adjoining rooms.
That's funny. Anyway, I'm leaving you in charge here. The police surgeon will be arriving to carry out a post-mortem.
All right, sir. Are you going back to London?
Yes, I think the case winds up there. The next move is to London to check that key against every lock in Mr. Regan's home and his office just to see if it fits.
I'm very sorry to bother you, ma'am, but I'd like to go right over the house, if you don't mind, trying the locks and If there are any cases or cupboards, etc., that I might miss, I'd be very pleased if you'd point them out to me. I've come along to see if you can help me, sir, in connection with Mr. Regan. I want to know if there's any desk or a cupboard in his office, or the office door itself, which has a lock for which this might be the key. I believe you've a lock-up garage here, formerly rented by Mr. Regan. It must, of course, have a lock, and I'd be glad if you'd allow me to compare the lock with this. No, sir. I've checked every conceivable place connected with Regan, and the answer's the same everywhere. The key does not belong.
In that case, we have our answer. Somewhere, someplace, Sergeant, there is a door, and behind that door we'll find the murderer. You know, if I was a philosopher, I would say that it's rather symbolic that we have a key to which we must fit the lock. Still, I'm not a philosopher, I'm a detective, and it's our job, Sergeant, to find the lock, to find the door, and to find the murderer. And that's just what we're going to do, Sergeant. We're going to find the door that this key fits.
In time, they were to find the door. By patient, methodical methods, they came to the front door of a small flat. The key fitted. The same key that can be seen today in the Black Museum. Inspector Russell went back to London, certain that the crime had motive, and that the motive would only be found by a search into the habits and associations of Thomas Regan. His first call was to the offices of Hardy & Sons, Limited, where he was speedily ushered into the presence of the reigning Mr. Hardy.
Come in, Inspector. Sit down.
Thank you, sir.
Shocking business. Now, who could have wanted to kill poor Regan?
That's what we're trying to find out.
Of course. Shocking. One of our best travelers.
What do you know of his personal life, Mr. Hardy?
I may be able to help you there, Inspector. I believe in taking an interest in my employees. I've always encouraged them to bring their troubles to me.
And Regan had troubles?
Yes. He was a bachelor. Rather a gay one at times. I suspect he was having trouble over a woman.
Yes?
A married woman. She kept on ringing up to speak to him, and the thing spread in the office. He was rather embarrassed and slightly worried about it all.
Do you happen to know the woman's name, Mr. Hardy?
I'm afraid I can't help you there, Inspector, though... Wait a minute.
Yes?
He did mention something. That's right. I've got it now. He didn't want to tell me her name.
That's a pity.
But in admitting she was married, he did tell me that her husband was a doctor on hospital duty.
A doctor?
Yes, and one other thing I recollect. He mentioned her first name. It was Lindell.
And I have information that the man we want to interview is young. That suggests a hospital intern.
Yes, with a wife named Lindell. Not very much to go on, Inspector.
It might be quite a help. He never told you, I suppose, whether it was a London hospital or not?
He never said so, but I'm quite sure it would be. At least the wife lives in London.
What makes you think that?
Well, the number of telephone calls that woman made to Regan. Nobody could afford that many trunk line calls.
So they began in London. St. Bartholomew's Hospital.
An intern or a young doctor whose wife's name is Lindell.
The registrars of the big hospitals consulted their records, made special inquiries. St. Thomas's, Westminster, Guy's. Each one of them returned to shake his head. There are several hundred hospitals in the London area. Big general hospitals, small private nursing homes, special hospitals, children's hospitals, maternity, infectious, orthopedic hospitals. At the first 42... they drew a blank. Then, at the London Royal Hospital at last.
A young intern whose wife's name's Lindell. That's a funny one, Inspector.
It's all the information we have, Doctor. It's useless to ask, I suppose, whether you might have this man on your staff.
But we do have him.
What?
Well, at any rate, one of our interns has a wife named Lindell, Dr. Bowen. Dr. Felix Bowen. I'll send for him, shall I?
No, wait, Doctor. Could you give me some idea what this Dr. Byrne looks like?
Yes, I think so. He's He's young, 31, I think. Quite tall, dark hair.
Would you have his address here in your records, Doctor?
Certainly. I'll get it for you, Inspector.
Thank you.
And shall I send for Dr. Bowen?
No, I don't want to see him just now, and I don't want it known that any inquiries have been made about him.
Very well, you can depend on me. Is he in some kind of trouble?
Nothing to worry about just yet, sir. Now, if you'll get me that address...
Patients had paid off. The 43rd Hospital. Now, to interview Lyndall Bowen. Inspector Russell went to the address he'd been given, a small flat in a good residential district. The lock on the door fascinated him. The urge to try out the key in his pocket was almost overwhelming. But instead, he knocked.
Mrs. Byrne?
Yes?
I'm Inspector Russell from Scotland Yard.
Scotland Yard?
May I come in?
Yes, of course.
Thank you.
She was young, an attractive woman, but her eyes were frightened.
Mrs. Byrne, when did you last see Thomas Regan?
Regan? Thomas Regan?
I think you know who I mean.
But I don't, Inspector. I'm very sorry.
Not at all, ma'am. Perhaps I'm mistaken.
Well, of course, I've read about him in the papers. That is, if it's the same, Mr. Regan.
It is the same. Mrs. Byrne, with your permission, I'd like to conduct a small experiment.
Experiment? I don't understand, Inspector.
It's quite simple. This key.
Key?
I'd like to try it in your front door.
But I...
Of course, if you choose to say no, then I won't be able to try it.
You won't?
But well, I also ought to warn you that I can return in a very short time with a warrant.
All right. Try it.
Thank you, Mrs. Byrne. I'll just open the door and insert the key...
The key turned, effortlessly and easily. Hope died in the woman's eyes. The inspector from the yard took out the key and closed the door again.
And now, Mrs. Byrne, you and I are going to have a talk about Thomas Regan.
That afternoon, several significant events took place. A gun was found beneath a pile of medical books. It was taken to Scotland Yard to the ballistics expert there.
The gun check, sir. That's the murder weapon, right enough.
Little wonder nobody heard the shot in the hotel. It's fitted with a silencer.
A silencer. Evidence of premeditation. Late that afternoon, the record of its purchase was uncovered. The second significant event.
The gun was bought at a shop in the Soho district, sir. A second-hand shop 2 weeks ago.
By whom, Sergeant?
The description covers Dr. Felix Bowen. And the proprietor says he could recognize the man if he saw him again.
We'll give him that chance. Come on.
Where to, sir?
The hospital. To pick up Bowen.
The third event was Bowen's flight across London. Somehow, in some way, the doctor learned of the net that was closing about him and made a run for it. He was gone when the detectives reached the London Royal Hospital. They drove to his home, but he wasn't there. Now across England, the vast network of police communications went into action. The teletype carried the news of the fugitive.
Central to all stations. General alarm for one Dr. Felix Byrne, age about 31. 6 feet tall, dark hair. Educated voice, quietly spoken. Wanted on suspicion of murder.
The search was on. In 1,000 stations, vigilant eyes searched for Bowen. On the streets, on trains and buses, in restaurants and hotels. Within 24 hours, he was picked up.
I really must insist. This is a terrible mistake. I really don't know what this is about.
I'm sure you've got nothing to worry about, sir. Just answer a few questions, that's all.
Well, of course, I'm perfectly prepared to cooperate with the law. But I must insist on an explanation at once.
Yes, yes, of course, sir. You see, unfortunately, your appearance coincides with the description of a man wanted by the police. It's just a routine matter, sir. If you'll give me some proof of your identity, we can clear the matter up in a few minutes.
But I explained to the constable it's no longer compulsory to carry an identity card.
Yes, I know that, sir. But before we release you, we must have proof of your identity.
Yes, but how can I...
Do you see, sir, we must be sure you're not the wanted man.
But I've told you already...
Now, Mr. Bowen.
Yes?
Yes. Dr. Bowen.
Inspector Russell?
This is Sergeant Thompson, sir. Highgate. We've picked up a man who we believe is Dr. Felix Bowen.
Hold him, Thompson. I'll be there in a matter of minutes.
It was Bowen right enough. But if Inspector Russell hoped for an easy confession, he was disappointed. The doctor was defiant and tight-lipped.
I know nothing, I tell you, nothing whatever. This whole thing is an outrage.
I must remind you, sir, that your wife has made certain admissions.
My wife? What has she told you?
That she and Regan were having a love affair. That you found out. And the day before last, you went down to Surrey to see Regan. You returned late that night.
Did I?
And under a pile of medical books in your bookcase, we found the gun you used. The game's up, Bowen.
The game is never up, Inspector. Until it's lost.
The evidence they had accumulated was impressive. But juries are cautious, and defense counsels are often very smart. There had to be no loopholes. There had to be complete corroborating evidence.
I think we've got our man all right. The next thing is to prove it beyond all shadow of doubt.
What's the next move then, sir?
Well, Sergeant, there's one person who got more than a passing glimpse of the murderer.
Oh, you mean Annie, the maid at the hotel.
Right. We'll see how Mr. Bowen fares on an identification parade. I have a feeling he won't fare too well. Now, Annie, I expect you've heard of an identification parade.
Yes, sir. Like they have on the films.
That's right, Annie, but this is not a film. This is the real thing. Before we go into the next room, I want to impress on you how important it is that you make no mistake. A man's life may depend on your judgment. So when you answer me, make sure, absolutely sure, beyond any shadow of doubt, the man you identify is the man you saw on the night of the murder.
Yes, sir.
Right, then. Now, in the next room, there are 8 men. I want you to follow me into the room, take a good look at each of them, and see if you can pick out from amongst them the man you saw in room 22 waiting for Mr. Regan.
Very well, sir. It's not the first gentleman. Nor the second. But this is the man, sir.
That's a lie.
Yes, and that's his voice. I'd know it anywhere. This is the man, Inspector.
Well, Mr. Bowen, would you like to make a statement to us now?
I have nothing to say. Except that I doubt that the evidence of a silly maid is likely to give you a conviction, Inspector, whatever you may think.
We're depending on more than that, Mr. Bowen. There are other witnesses, including a silent witness, a door key. That was careless of you, Mr. Bowen. Very careless indeed.
Bowen was identified also by the owner of the second-hand shop as being the man who had bought the gun some 2 weeks before. With that, the case was complete. A door key had helped to find a murderer. And that self-same key can be seen today in the Black Museum. Bowen killed the man who had stolen the affections of his wife. His was not a clever crime. It was premeditated, without a doubt, but clumsily conceived. For the young doctor was no student of the art of murder. Yet he might have escaped justice had not a key fallen from his pocket. A key which ultimately brought the police to his front door. And now, until we meet next time in the same place, and I tell you another story about the Black Museum, I remain, as always, obediently yours.
Leading police perhaps to the front door of someone they would not expect involved in a crime, a doctor, whose wife, as it turns out, had been carrying on with the person who became the deceased. That was the door key from the Black Museum from 1952. The Shadow is next. You're listening to old-time radio drama on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Surgeon John Lambert has been sent to prison on a bum rap, and now that he's out, he's being pressured to do the bidding of the head of a slave ring. It's all part of shyster payoff, The Shadow, from November 6th, 1938.
Dealer presents The Shadow. These half-hour dramatizations are designed to forcibly demonstrate to old and young alike that crime does not pay. The Shadow's adventure begins in just a moment. But first, do you know exactly what the blue coloring on blue coal means? Well, that's the trademark of the Glen Alden Coal Company, the world's largest hard coal producer. And it's placed on their product, blue coal, to guarantee that you're getting a superior quality anthracite. So insist on blue coal when you order anthracite for the coming winter. Your entire family will appreciate blue coal's greater heating comfort. You'll appreciate blue coal's greater heating economy. Call your dealer for your supply of blue coal tomorrow. Shadow, mysterious character who aids those in distress and helps the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the unseen voice belongs. The only one who knows the true identity of that master of other people's minds, the Shadow. Today's story, Shyster Payoff.
Commissioner Weston, my paper wants to know what you're doing about this wave of holdup.
I hear you're resigning, Commissioner.
What about the mayor's statement, Weston? Yes, come on, let's have your story.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute, boys. Right. I'll give you a statement. Right. Okay, Commissioner, thanks. Sure, we're having a crime wave. But the police department is as good as you'll find in any city. We make arrests. The trouble is the district attorney's office can't get convictions. But it isn't the DA's fault that the work of his office is hampered by a political fixer and a shyster lawyer.
Can we quote you on that?
Yeah, how about naming the shyster, Commissioner Weston?
Who's the political fixer?
Come on,
give us some more.
Hold it, boys, hold it. What is it, Sergeant?
There's a call in your office, Commissioner Weston.
Sorry, boys, that's all. See you later. Who is it, the mayor?
No, it's him again.
Who are you talking about? Who's him?
The Shadow.
The Shadow? If I haven't got enough troubles. All right, I'll talk to him. I'll call you if I need you.
Yes, sir.
All right, Shadow, what is it this time?
Good afternoon, Commissioner Weston. Did you enjoy your conference with the gentlemen of the press?
You know everything, don't you?
You flatter me, Commissioner.
All right, let's have it.
Commissioner, do my ears deceive me, or did I really detect a note of, shall we say, welcome in your voice?
Listen, Shadow, I'll admit you have helped the police department at times, and I'm willing to accept tips or help from you just as I would from any other citizen. I take it you are a citizen and are interested in law enforcement.
Yes, Commissioner Weston. I am a citizen, and I am interested in law enforcement.
I wish there were more like that. But you didn't call me to exchange compliments. What do you want?
I called, Commissioner, to make a deal.
A deal? For yourself, Shadow?
No. Merely a deal whereby you will be ready to round up a criminal syndicate headed by Tiger, the notorious shyster lawyer, Grogan, the political fixer, and Red Doyle, the gangster.
You're crazy, Shadow. We know they're all crooks, but we can't prove it.
Suppose I could produce proof.
I wouldn't arrest a combination like that without an ironclad case. I wouldn't last 24 hours if the rap didn't stick. They'd have my job.
You'll have your ironclad case, Commissioner Weston. Wait until you hear from me.
Your Honor, may it please the court. I submit that the indictment against my client, Harry Dale, is improperly drawn, and I therefore ask that the state's case be dismissed.
I object, Your Honor! The indictment against Harry Dale is properly drawn under Section 73 of the Penal Code! Order! Order in the court!
Just a moment, gentlemen. The jury will please retire, for I hear your arguments on a point of law which is not within the province of their deliberation. Farewell, Mr. Tigert, Mr. Prosecutor. Step to the bar.
I will hear your arguments as to the validity of this indictment.
Lamont Cranston, would you mind telling me why we've been following this lawyer, Rex Taggart, from court to court, watching him plead case after case?
Just to give my very lovely assistant, Margot Lane, a cook's tour of the more unpleasant side of the legal profession. How do you like Taggart, Margot?
He reminds me of a snake. What's he doing now, Lamont?
Taggart is pulling another legal technicality, snatching another criminal from the hands of the law.
How did he get away with it?
The law, Margot, is flexible. But its flexibility can be used by shyster lawyers like Taggart to provide loopholes.
Order! Silence in the court!
Watch what happens now.
Order! Silence in the court. Mr. Prosecutor, I regret I must agree with the arguments of counsel for the defense, Mr. Taggart.
I protest, Your Honor! I protest!
Due to the testimony given by the defense, and because of this technical error in the indictment, I must dismiss the case against Harry Dale and discharge the jury.
Lamont, Taggart just went into that apartment building. How much longer are we going to follow him around in the car?
I've got to follow Taggart, watch every move he makes, Margot. I promised Commissioner Weston an airtight case. I'm getting proof of a vicious racket. A racket that forces innocent people into a life of crime.
Where are you going, Lamont?
I'm going to follow Taggart into that apartment as the Shadow. I have an idea Taggart is about to collect his fee for defending a recent client. Stay here, Margot. Wait till I return.
Taggart, why have you come to my apartment? My brother's not here. My brother's not here, I tell you. I've given you every cent I have, every cent I can raise for defending him.
For saving your brother from the electric chair, Ruth Dale.
But my brother was innocent.
Yes, but the evidence was all against him. Your brother is alive, free, only because of my knowledge of the law and your perjured testimony.
Why, you made me testify falsely. You told me it was the only way to save my brother.
Yes, yes, I did. Do you want him tried again on the evidence? I can arrange it. And I can have you arrested for perjury, sent to prison.
Oh, no, no, please let me alone.
Your brother needs money. You need money. I can show you both how to make a lot of it. Quite easily.
We won't do anything criminal.
My plans are quite simple. You look like a girl accustomed to buying expensive jewels. You have only to go into jewelry shops and ask to see certain gems. When they're shown to you, it won't be your fault if your brother and others happen in and take them away.
And suppose we refuse?
You will go to prison for perjury, and the electric chair will be waiting for your brother.
Night to be driving, Lamont.
Sorry, Margot. Wherever Taggart goes, we go.
Oh, I detest Taggart. But I'm glad he was able to get Dr. Lambert's parole. I never did believe Dr. Lambert was responsible for that woman's death.
Yes, Margot. I'm glad Lambert is out, too. But I'm sorry for anyone Taggart helps.
Lamont, do you think Taggart means to force him into his crime syndicate, too?
Yes, Margot. The way he's done to Ruth Dale and her brother and many others.
Oh, but those poor people he's forcing into crime must be helped. Why don't you tell Commissioner Weston?
I'm not ready, Margot. It takes a lot of fine threads to make a web of evidence to catch a slippery eel like Taggart. Besides, there are others. I'm out to get political fixer Grogan, Red Doyle the gangster. They're part of Taggart's crime syndicate.
Lamont, it's raining so hard I can't see. Where are we?
Outside the home of Dr. John Lambert, late of Lingate Prison. And look, yes. There in the driveway, Taggart's car.
What's the next move, Lamont?
Margot, you drive down
yes,
the road.
Yes, I know, Lamont, and wait.
I'm sorry, Margot. I know it's cold and wet, but I won't be long. I have a notion, Margot, that we'll drive away from here with an ironclad case for Commissioner Weston.
Well, go on, Lamont. I'll wait. Good luck, Shannon.
Why did you get me out, Taggart? What good am I to myself or to anybody? A doctor convicted of murder without a right to practice. Where can I go? The parole board says I can't leave the state. What can I do? The board says I'll be sent back to prison if I don't get a job. Why didn't you let me serve out my sentence? Why didn't you leave me alone?
Easy, easy. Take it easy. Because I can use you, Dr. Lambert. I have connections, friends who need a doctor they can trust.
Oh, who would trust me?
You can be trusted, because you have reason to hate and fear the law as much as these connections of mine.
But I've got to have a legitimate job or I'll be sent back to prison.
I'll arrange that.
All right, what do I have to do?
It's right in your line as a surgeon. You'll be ready, day or night, to treat gunshot wounds, remove bullets, perhaps graft skin and change faces which have unfortunately found their way into the rogues' gallery of the police.
What's in it for me?
Money. Money you'll need for that fresh start when your year's probation is over.
You'd let me go when my probation's up a year from now?
Sure. That's fair enough, isn't it?
Just for 1 year. 12 months. Then money and a chance to get away. Far away. All right, Tiger, I'll do it. When do I start?
I'm afraid, Doctor, you'll have to wait until one of my connections gets hurt. Meanwhile, you're $200 as a retainer. Tell the probation board you're working for me as an investigator, but keep away from my law office. Just stay here and wait till you hear from me.
All right, I understand.
Maybe a week before you get a call. But when it comes, go where you are told. And keep your mouth shut, or you'll go back to the big house for another stretch. That's all, Dr. Lambert.
A shyster lawyer. A shyster doctor. You're in good company, John Lambert. Good company. I've got to stop talking to myself. I'm not in solitary. I'm free. I'm not in prison anymore. What was that? That voice?
No, you're still in prison. You're not free, John Lambert. You'll never be free. They'll never let you go.
A voice. It laughed. It spoke to me. It answered me. Oh, am I losing my mind?
No, Lambert. You're quite sane. But unless you listen to me, you're entering another kind of bondage.
But what is this voice? It can't happen. It can't.
There is more than a voice in this room. I am quite real, quite close to you. As close as Rex Tigert was a few moments ago.
Hypnosis?
Yes, hypnosis. I'm here in this room, but I've clouded your mind so that you cannot see me.
But who are you? What do you want?
John Lambert, haven't you ever heard a certain name whispered through the dark cells of Lyngate Prison? A name associated with the unseen? A name criminals hate and fear?
The Shadow. You are the Shadow?
Yes. But you have no reason to fear me. I believe you're an innocent man, unjustly convicted.
The newspaper said I was innocent, too. But I went to prison just the same for 7 long years. Now, Tiger has offered me money, then freedom after a year. What can you offer, Shadow?
A chance to be true to your profession, to yourself.
I have no profession. They took that away from me, and they took my self-respect, too. I'm not Dr. John Lambert, the surgeon. I'm ex-con number 2847, convicted murderer, out on parole because of a shyster, dirty shyster lawyer. There is no more Dr. John Lambert.
You're wrong. That was John Lambert speaking just now, crying out against this bargain you've made with Tigert, a swine who never kept a bargain in his life.
Oh, yes. You're right, Shadow. I can't go through with it. And yet if I don't, Tigert will send me back. You know, he can. He has influence.
I, too, have influence and power, Dr. Lambert.
Doctor. Dr. Lambert. It's been 7 years and anybody called me doctor without a sneer or a laugh.
What would you give to regain your professional honor? To escape Tiger's bondage?
Oh, don't, Shadow, please.
The law can make amends.
The law.
It needs your help.
Why should I help the law? It destroyed me.
You can help put an end to criminal slavery such as Tiger offers you and countless others. You can help wipe out a vicious racket that enslaves poor unfortunates more than the prison from which they were released.
Prison. Bondage. Yes, that it. It's bondage. Not freedom, not hope.
You'll never be free. You'll never have hope. Unless...
Unless what, Shadow?
Unless you help me put Tiger and his kind behind bars.
All right, Shadow. I will. I'll do it. I'll do anything you say, because I know I can trust you. Even the men you sent to Lyngate, the men who hate and fear you, swear you never break your word.
I'll keep my word, Dr. Lambert.
Tell me what you want me to do.
Do nothing until Tiger's associates call you. Then go where they tell you. But before you go, I want you to phone a certain number.
What number, Shadow?
It's written on the old prescription pad on your desk.
On the old prescription pad?
Yes, Dr. Lambert. On the prescription pad. See it there? Old. 7 years yellowed with age. But that number will bring the Shadow to you wherever you go. And it will mark the beginning of the road back for you and many others. If you do not fail me. If you do not fail... The Shadow.
In just a moment, we continue with the Shadow's gripping adventure. But first, a warning to all homeowners. Despite the present warm spell, advance reports from meteorologists predict the severest winter in 11 years. So there's no time like right now to order your supply of anthracite. It's the fuel furnaces in this section were especially designed to burn. And it's the fuel which will give you more even, dependable, and helpful heat at less cost. But when you order your supply, don't be content with just any anthracite. Insist on blue coal, and be sure of getting America's finest anthracite. Blue coal is the only trademarked hard coal. It's a guaranteed product of the Glen Alden Coal Company, the world's largest anthracite producer. Each carload, as it comes from their mines, is carefully tested by inspectors. Only the coal which meets Glen Alden's highest standards of quality is accepted for shipment and trademarked a harmless blue for easy identification. You'll welcome blue coal's greater economy. It burns better, banks better, gives you longer firing periods. So call and order your supply of blue coal tomorrow. Your dealer's name is listed in the Where to Buy It section of your classified telephone directory under the words blue coal. And be sure to ask your dealer about the blue coal heat regulator. It's a thermostat which controls your furnace dampers automatically and saves you all the time and trouble of constant furnace attention. It costs only $18.95, plus a nominal installation charge.
I believe this is the end of the trail, Margot.
I hope so, Lamont. When did Dr. Lambert phone you?
About an hour ago. Tigard ordered him to go to the old Empire Hotel.
Where's that?
Along the beach, about 3 blocks from here. Slow the car down, Margot.
I thought every hotel out here was closed for the winter.
They are. So it makes an ideal headquarters for Tigard's mob.
Why don't you let Commissioner Weston round them up, Lamont? You've done enough.
No, Margot. I promised Weston an airtight case. I've got to be sure the whole outfit is caught with the goods before I give Weston the word to close in.
What makes you so sure this will be the finish?
It's the logical time for the gang to be paid off, Margot. Those 3 big jewel robberies this week, all unquestionably Tigard's gang. A girl going into the stores and asking to see certain valuable gems.
Well, that was Ruth Dale, all right. The description fitted perfectly. But why did they call for Dr. Lambert?
The driver of the getaway car was shot, Margot. Are they 2-1? Lambert is treating him right now.
Be careful, he doesn't have to take a bullet out of the shadow.
Oh. Stop right here, Margot. Yeah, this is close enough. Now, Margot, wait and keep the short wave tuned in on the band the shadow always uses. Phone Weston the minute I give the word. Then go straight back to town and wait for me.
Lamont, if I don't hear from you in an hour...
You'll still stay away from the Empire Hotel, Margot Lane. That's an order.
Lamont Cranston, there are times when I wish I'd never heard of the shadow. Well, go on, Lamont, and get this over with.
Give me a drink. Give me my cut. Diary, got to get me out of this. Shut door. Tigers, get going, Lisa. I don't want to burn.
There, easy now. Please take it easy.
Listen, Doc.
Yes?
Keep that guy quiet. Give him something to shut him up. That's what we're paying you for.
The man is delirious, Doyle. Why didn't you call me sooner?
Fix him up and don't ask so many questions.
Where's Tigers?
He's in the next room. What do you care? Now, you do as you're told and shut that guy up.
Come on, Doyle. Let's get this slip ticket out.
Okay, Tiger. Keep your shirt on. I'm coming.
Doyle, don't touch me. Throw me down. I'm sorry, fellow, but I guess I'll have to put you under. Oh, why doesn't the shadow come? They're all here. Why doesn't he come?
I am here, Dr. Lambert. I've been here for several minutes.
Shadow, thank heaven you found the place.
Well, Tiger, Logan.
Give the man a hypo if he can stand it. Put him to sleep.
I've already given it to him, but he should be in
a
hospital.
He'll be on his way to a hospital in a few minutes.
Are those the men you want out there, Shadow? Red Doyle is the actual leader of the gang, but Tiger gives the orders. I don't know anything about Grogan.
Grogan is the rottenest of the lot. He's a political fixer, without whom no big gang can operate.
I know, but you're not going to tackle them alone.
No. But we're going to hold them in the next room until the police can close in. Commissioner Weston is waiting for word from me. Can you handle a gun?
Yes. Here, this wounded man has gone under. He won't give us any trouble.
Good. Quick now. Take his gun over there on the table.
All right, Shadow. It's loaded.
Good. Now pocket that gun. Go in that other room. Get as close to Tiger as you can. When I speak, grab Tiger and shove that gun in his back. Don't let anyone get behind you.
All right, Shadow. You haven't failed me so far, and I trust you now.
Calling Margot Lane. Vaughn Weston at the 17th Precinct Station. He is there, ready and waiting. Tell him to surround and raid the Empire Hotel. Break into basement. Let no one escape. That is all.
All right, Tiger. The split is all figured out. Now, here's the payoff sheet.
All right, Doyle. Pay off the punks first and get them out of here.
Okay. Come here, Root Dale. Now, here's your cut. $50.
I don't want it. I won't take it. $50. $50 for turning criminal, helping rob three jewelry stores. You got $50,000 worth of gems. The newspaper said so.
Ah, quit reading the papers. They always double a haul.
$50 for helping you.
Your friends only paid us $10,000 for the stuff. There was five of my regular boys who did the dirty work. $1,000 for Tiger, the Springers, if things went haywire. $1,000 to Grogan for a fix just in case and the getaway car.
You better take it, Ruth. There's no other way.
Take it or leave it. Only remember what I told you. The electric chair is still waiting for your brother here.
Oh, please, I don't want the money. I don't care. Just let us go.
Out of the way, Dame. All right, Dale. Here's your cut. $100.
Don't take it, Harry. Don't.
Better take your share, Dale. Next time I may not be able to spring you.
No, my sister's right. I didn't want to get mixed up in this. You made me, Tigers. I'm getting out with Ruth.
Don't try it. Nobody quits. All right, now beat it, punks. Go on upstairs. Doyle and Grogan and I have got some things to talk over.
Well, what about me, Tiger?
Almost forgot you, Lambert. Didn't see you standing behind me. Give the doc $200, Doyle. How's the patient?
As well as could be expected.
Don't worry if you lose him. He's a dumbbell anyhow.
Come on, Doyle. Let you, Tiger, and me get down to business.
Okay, okay, Grogan. Come on, Dale. You and your sister and Lambert, beat it.
Not so fast, gentlemen.
Hey, what's that? What was that? What was that?
Just an unseen guest at the division of the spoils of crime.
Tiger, there's only one guy that lasts like that. A guy nobody's even seen.
The Shadow.
Yes, Tiger. The Shadow.
Boss, he's come for a cut. Give it to him. He's poison.
Yeah. He'll get a cut.
Stand still, Tiger. Don't move.
Lambert! What are you doing? Let go of me! Take that gun out of my back, you fool! Doyle! Grogan! Help me!
They move, I'll shoot, Tiger.
Well done, Dr. Lambert. Careful, Tiger.
Lambert, you double-cropping...
Shut up, Tiger. Doyle. Throw your gun on the table. Throw it. Now you, Grogan.
I don't carry a gun.
Hurry, Dale. Search Grogan.
Right.
Miss Dale, you search Tiger.
All right.
Grogan hasn't got a gun, Shadow.
Tiger hasn't either.
Don't move. Those sirens mean Commissioner Weston and the police are coming to the Feast of the Unholy Three.
Shadow, I don't want to get mixed up with this gang. Tiger arranged my parole and forced me into it.
Will you tell that to a grand jury, Dale?
Yes, I'll testify. I'll testify against them. And my sister will too, won't you, Ruth?
Yes, I'll tell the police everything. I'll tell them, Shadow.
If you turn state's evidence, you'll both go free. I have Commissioner Weston's promise.
So you're working with Commissioner Weston, eh, Shadow?
I've always worked for law and order. Keep away from those books on the table, Grogan. Dale, pick up those books. Hold on to them. Give them to Weston when he gets here.
You can't pin anything on me, Shadow.
Your name is in those books. You're on the payroll, Grogan. Those books will send you up for 20 years.
The cops are coming down here, Tiger. Don't move, Tiger.
Stay where you are, Doyle.
There they are, by somebody. Stand where you are, all of you. Don't move.
Commissioner Weston, here's the gang's book.
Thanks, Dale. I know all about you. All right, Dr. Lambert, you can take that gun out of Tiger's back. I know all about you, too.
You sweat for this, Weston.
Well, if it isn't my old pain in the neck, Grogan, a political fixer.
Yeah. He's part of the gang. He's on the payroll.
You
the
ain't got nothing on me.
What about this girl here, Commissioner?
He's all right, too. Don't put the cuffs on her. Red Doyle, Tiger, Grogan. What a night's work.
You never pin anything on me, Weston.
Save your shyster breath for the trial, Tiger. All right, take him away, boys.
Right, sir, Commissioner.
Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Take Harry Dale, his sister Ruth, and Dr. Lambert to my office. Get their statements and have them wait for me.
Yes, Commissioner.
There's a wounded man in the other room, Commissioner. He's badly hurt.
Sergeant, get him and rush him to the hospital. All right, boys, take these crooks out of here.
They get right here, sir.
Shadow?
Yes, Commissioner?
Thanks. You certainly handed me an airtight case against three of the biggest crooks in the city.
You'll keep your promise to help Dr. Lambert, Dale, and his sister?
You kept your promise. I'll keep mine.
That's all I ask.
You're a strange man, Shadow. That's all you ever ask.
I told you I was just a citizen interested in law enforcement, in seeing the innocent protected and the guilty punished. Goodbye, Commissioner. Until we meet again.
In just a moment, we have a surprise for you. A preview of next week's exciting Shadow adventure. But first, here's John Barclay, Blue Coal's heating expert, with some more helpful information to all householders. Mr. Barclay.
Thank you, Ken Roberts, and good evening, friends. Many people write in to tell me that they don't get the best heating results from the amount of coal they put on the fire. Well, that may be caused by losing heat up the chimney. chimney loss is a common source of trouble and unnecessary waste of coal. However, it's an easy matter to remedy. The next time you fix the fire, move the handle of your turn damper, that disc inside the smoke pipe, 1/16 of an inch toward the closed position. If the fire continues to burn freely, turn it another 1/16 of an inch. Repeat this operation until you've moved the turn damper as near as possible to the closed position. For the nearer the turn damper to the closed position, the smaller the chimney loss. When you've found the ideal adjustment, mark the position with a piece of chalk on the smoke pipe and leave your dampers there throughout the burning season. If you find you have any other particular heating problem, I'd suggest you call your blue coal dealer. He'll place a trained John Barclay heating serviceman at your disposal. You'll find him fully qualified to check over your furnace and show you how to get better heat at less cost. I thank you.
Now, a preview of next week's Shadow Story, Black Rock.
Martin, and you too, Ward. Yeah. You're working for me now. What I say goes.
Okay, Burkett, we get it.
What's the gag? A big business executive like you turning crook.
Shut up, you two, and listen to me. Now, here's the setup. I'm going to steal, or shall I say acquire, the entire profits, $2 million, of my company.
Oh, boy, I get it, and then leave all the poor stockholders holding the bag.
You'd take candy from a baby, wouldn't you?
Don't worry. You two guys, you'll get your cut.
Will innocent stockholders be robbed by an unscrupulous profiteer, or will the Shadow be able to protect them? Find out next week when you hear the Shadow's newest adventure, Black Rock. This program has been a dramatized version of one of the many copyrighted stories which appear in the Shadow magazine, now on sale at your local newsstand. All the characters and all the places named are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental.
The weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The Shadow knows.
Next week, same time, same station, Blue Coal, America's finest anthracite, will again present The Shadow. Be sure to listen and be sure to burn Blue Coal, the solid fuel for solid comfort.
With Bill Johnstone and Agnes Moorhead as The Shadow and Margot Lane, that was Shyster Payoff from November 6th, 1938. And our final foray into old-time radio drama for this Sunday night. I'm Norman Gilliland. I hope you can join me next weekend from 8 to 11 for more, same time, same station, of the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.